It is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Her name is Mandy M., and she says, when I get scared, I go to my toolbox. And I will let her tell you what that means.
Thank you so much. My name is Mandy, and I am an alcoholic. I feel so honored to be here. I feel honored that I was even asked. And I still get shocked the fact that I'm still here, but I'm more than grateful that I am here. The first time I was introduced to AA was over 18 years ago, and that was due to my first DUI. I grew up in Lemoore. I'm a Machado, born and raised in Lemoore like my father. And I was born in the mid-70s, and I come from a really good home. There was never any alcoholism in my home. My dad could drink them, put them away, and he could stop. There was never drugs. My mom would drink like a drink and say, I need coffee, right after one drink. So she was really, we have a lot of different craziness in our family, but she was the most a nurturing person and still is. But I don't know how she survived me and my family because we were kind of the crazy crew. My first experience with alcohol was when I was probably that I can remember is when I was 7. My dad used to work for Coors Light, and yeah, he was a salesman, and he had the truck, and he delivered beer. And most fathers have like the man cave, and the man cave was the garage. And in the garage, my dad had two refrigerators. One was where we stored a lot of the freezer goods, and the other one was the Coors Light. And so I don't know why, but in my neighborhood, everyone came to my house, and they were all out in the garage where the man cave was and the ass tracker. That's a boat. It's called the Bass Tracker, but for years I only knew it as the ass tracker because my dad scratched off the B. And I finally went to a private school in first grade, and my mom said, I can't say that anymore. And so, but that was the first time I ever had a beer. I had had sips before because I would grab my dad a beer, grab my uncles a beer, and sometimes they would let me take a sip. But I finally was curious, I guess because they were all drinking it, and I wanted to know, and I'm very curious. And so I snuck a beer out of the fridge, and I remember I drank it, and it was gross, and I only drank half of it. But I remember, I tell you this detailed part of it because I'm such an alcoholic back then and I don't even know it. But I remember drinking half of it and I'm thinking, oh, this is gross. I can pour it out in the... My dad had one of the big, like, garage sinks. But then I remember going to pour it out and I was like, wait, what if I get caught? Like, if they know there's beer down the drain. My dad doesn't pour... My head was already doing that committee thing. So I remember I slammed it. And I drank it and then I went to the side of the house because we had like three trash cans and I threw it away. So I didn't get caught with that. When I started to get in trouble, the very first time I ever got in trouble, I was a freshman at King's Christian in Lemoore, and there was a handful of us girls, about five or six of us. It was SAT week. It was from, we were all like in high school, and one of my girlfriends who I grew up with was in eighth grade. I was a freshman. And it was foggy day, SAT, so our days are really short. So we decided to have one of our friends' older boyfriends purchase us some wine coolers, and I think we bought a six-pack. So before we went to class, we each had a couple wine coolers and a beer. And mind you, we did this in like 45 minutes. So there's us young girls, teeny boppers, that don't really drink that much. I had never drank before, and we're slamming these beers like it's nothing. And so when we went back to class or went to school finally, of course, my friend Megan, she ended up falling down the stairs, and we got caught. So our little drunk escapade. I didn't get expelled, but I got suspended. We all got suspended for a few days. So I went to the coast. And I just, you know, I didn't know I was going to have a problem. But as I got older and I went through high school, I went through the party phase. I mean, and when you grow up in Lemoore, you have dirt, you know, there's the Endo, that's the end of Hanford Armona Road. We have Fiesta Forest. We have all these party spots, and that's what all of us kids did on the weekends. And I remember the first time I got in trouble with the law, I was 16. And it was a whole bunch of us friends, like three guys and three girls. We were in a Jeep. It was my boyfriend's at the time. And he was driving, and some, long story short, a fight almost broke out. And so when the guys jumped out, they were going to fight. I moved over behind the wheel in the Jeep Wrangler, the Jeep, and the ignition, the key was turned, so the engine was running, and a cop pulled up, and we had an open container. So even though I don't even think I drank that night. If I did, I may have had one. Because if I drank, I wouldn't remember. I wouldn't be able to tell you this. I would have blacked out. And because that was usually the purpose, to get drunk. And I'm the one that got a minor that night. So that was the first time I was a juvenile. I got in trouble. I had to go to court. Once I turned 18, it was expunged. So through high school, I pretty much stayed out of trouble. I don't know why. In high school, I think we were a little smarter than in college. You would think it'd be different, but it just didn't work that way for us. A lot of my girlfriends, I'm including, we were very fearless. I went through a phase, like, at the end of my senior year and freshman year, where I just didn't care. I was hurt. I was angry. I had a bruised ego from a boyfriend that ended up not being a good boyfriend. And that's when I really started to party hard, and I kind of just threw in the towel and I said, this is the time for it. I was living on my own. I was living in Hanford. We call it the H-bomb. And, you know, that's when I started to have my first were in high school, blackouts. But it's when I had my regular blackouts. And it's also when I started to get introduced to other substances. So I was the alcoholic that switched from scotch to brandy, from alcohol to drugs, to alcohol to drugs to alcohol. I never stopped. If it wasn't one thing, it was all or something. And the first time I remember getting real sad is when I did some uppers. I did some speed. I did some crank is what I did. And I thought, because no one was getting me to do it, and because I was curious, because I was kind of around. I ended up finding I was dating one of the biggest dope dealers in Hanford, and I was so disconnected at that time, I had no idea. And let me tell you, the narcs know his name, and I found this out years. I mean, I found out later, soon. But what I know now, and how I could have just went down so many times, I think I know I have angels. Because I could be in prison for many, many accounts for things that I was just had my head so far up my butt. I was just clueless, and that's the disconnection. The first time I ever legally got in trouble as a legal adult was in October of 1996, and I remember I was at my brother's. His name is Bobby. It's just me and him and our parents, and a few of my girlfriends and I went over there just to hang out, barbecue, have a few drinks. And I had some Strawberry Hill, and I really wasn't even drunk. That wasn't very much. But on my way home, I had me and my girlfriend, one of my best friends, Naomi. We called her Shinomi. We were driving home, and I was speeding a little bit in Hanford on 10th Avenue, and a cop pulled me over. And I was like, oh, shit. And I thought, dang it, okay, give me some gum. And he was so nice. He felt bad, but he had to do it. And so I got arrested, and I remember a couple of my friends, Mandy, did you get arrested last night? Dude, we saw your Mustang. And so I got arrested. I got my riots read. I got that picture, front, side, side. I have the picture. I'll never get rid of that picture. And I had to drink in the Kings County drunk tank. And I walked in there, and I was a mess. I looked like hell. And no one was in there. Mind you, it wasn't like a Saturday. It was like Wednesday. And I remember looking at the walls and I'm like, yeah, all I did was drink tonight. Because when you walk into the drunk tank, there's like pink elephants on the wall. And I'm thinking, I didn't do anything like any psychedelic shit. No, I thought my brothers. And so I thought, I was upset. I didn't know if they were going to call my parents. And I knew they couldn't because I was a legal adult. But my, you know, your head, you're already planning how to get away with this. And so finally, my car was not taken. My friend, you know, this is 96, so my friend picked me up the following morning, and I didn't tell my parents for a while. But let me tell you, 3 weeks later, I was at a party, and I decked a bra for coming at me sideways, and my ego just couldn't take it. And I wasn't even drunk. I had been smoking on some stuff, so I was kind of in the laid back, but that was where my disease took me. And all I remember that, I mention this night a lot because this is the, I've learned a lot from just that night. That night, when I got the minor, I took the blame for a girl because I didn't want her to get in trouble, which I know damn good and well the cops came because I decked the owner of the house. And there was this guy there, and another Portuguese, and he was drunk. And I remember he threw a softball, the big baseball softball, at the cop car. And we're in the front yard. I didn't even make it in the house when the fight broke out. And all I know is he got arrested, and he had his shirt off, and he's all, call my lawyer. It was like a comedy. It was funny. But I'll tell you, what isn't funny is when he, 5 years later, was in Fresno State at the fraternity, and he went farther in his disease as well, and he ended up blowing his head off in front of his frat brothers. And that's where his disease took him. So he isn't with us anymore. But I think about that night because that was me and him that night that got in trouble with the Kings County police. And he was the one arrested. And I just think, oh my gosh, for the grace of God, as they say, there go I. After I got in trouble for that, I still had to go to court for my first DUI. And so I finally told my parents. I think they found out. No, they found out something because something with the Mustang. I don't know how they found out because it's been a lot of years, but they found out and I told them. So I wasn't driving. I gave them my keys to the car. They paid my insurance. I think that's how they found out. So January 3rd, 1997 comes. I just spent Christmas with my parents. Had a really good Christmas. I'm living in Visalia, but my parents are in Lemoore. And I had a good Christmas. I went to the coast, came home. January 3rd during the day, I was at my boyfriend's house, and that was a very unhealthy relationship. Very sick. It was love, but it wasn't the right kind of love. It was just unhealthy. And I was on my way to pick him up that night. I was at my friend's house, and I had a few beers. We had road tripped earlier. And I don't remember this night. I barely remember that day. That night was when my whole life changed. That night, it was about 8:30, and I was on my way to pick him up from a friend's house. I was out on like 9th and a quarter, and it was really bad weather. A lot of counties had been evacuated, like San Joaquin. My grandfather lived there. My mom had, I guess, been trying to get a hold of me all day. Of course, I don't even think I had a cell then. It was in the mid-90s. I think we had beepers still. And she had left me a message, but I hadn't been home, and I went to pick him up, and I didn't make it. When I ran that stop sign, it was 9th and a quarter, there was a car coming from the opposite direction, or from the side, and it didn't have a stop sign. So it hit me going about 55, 50, 60, and so I was in a two-seater car, my friends. I wasn't even supposed to be driving, and this is from what they told me. I saw pictures of it. The car doesn't make sense. The only thing in the car makes sense is the 12-pack in the back seat. My whole seat of the driver was pushed completely into the passenger side, and the whole front was completely smushed in. The car was completely totaled, and there happened to be a man out there who was a realtor, and he was helping a friend who bought a house right out there in the country, and he heard the whole thing, and he ran out there. The reason I bring this up is because he was my landlord when I lived in Hanford, and he was raising a little bit of hell with me from in Hanford because I was partying too much. And back then, And I was like, well, forget you, I'll just move. And I did. Well, that night, he was out there. He saw the wreck, and it was completely totaled. What stopped the car is I hit a water well, and that's where it completely crumbled. And he called the cops, and they had to use the jaws of life on me. The people that hit me, by God's grace, they weren't hurt like I was. One of them, I think, fractured a wrist, and the other one broke an ankle, but they went home that night. For me, I don't remember any of this, but I used to tell my family, because they would hear about it, tell me, I need to know. It's like I needed to keep hearing it over and over again. I don't know why, but I just did. And they had to get the jaws of life out, and they had to cut me out of the car, and they took me to Hanford Community. My eye was hanging out. It was still connected, but it was hanging. My jaw was broke. I had my head was cracked open. You could see my brain right here. I have a scar right there. My head swelled bigger than a basketball. I broke this leg completely. I compound fractured this wrist and this ankle. I ripped this leg open because it caught a hold of the handle on the door. And it sounds so painful, but I don't remember any of it, because for the brain swelling, they gave me a specific medicine that gives you amnesia. But before they did that, they had to first save me, and I went through about 25 hours worth of surgery. 12 of it was just on my brain. They gave me last rites about 3 to 5 times. I was on life support for 17 days. And I was in the hospital for almost 2 months. I was airlifted from Hanford to Fresno University Medical Center. And back then, UMC and Fresno Community weren't connected. So I was there for a month. And then I went to Fresno Community for almost another month. And, you know, by the grace of God, I survived. But it was a long journey for my family. They're probably the ones that suffered, even though they would never say that, because I'm their baby. But I was kind of like, I don't know if any of you, I always say this, not to make fun of me, but it just is the truth. Have any of you guys ever seen Drew Barrymore from 51st States? Yeah, that was me. Every time I fell asleep, every time I faded out, I'd wake up, what happened, where am I, who did this, what's going on? Sometimes I would be stuck at different ages. Like one time I was 16, and my ex-boyfriend that my parents liked came to see me, and we're still good friends, but my sister-in-law was there, and I think I thought that was his wife, and I told her to get out. So I had a long road to go. I was very, very brain damaged. And I lost vision in this eye. I lost a little hearing because of the brain injury. But I survived. And once you survive, and you have the family that I come from, you have good odds. Now, the second obstacle, which was the hardest, was when life got back on life's terms. I had to go to court. I had to go to Superior Court because of my wreck. It was a felon. I was looking at doing chowchilla time in the women's facility. I got a damn good lawyer, and he was nervous. And by the grace of God, I got county. They put me on house arrest. I was on formal probation for 2.5 years and informal for another 2.5. But if I were to get popped, because they came and tested me sometimes, I had no idea. I was on the house monitor too. And back then, it cost every day like $25. I was on it for 6 months. And so we spent quite a bit of money. You know, just thank God I had medical insurance, because the first week of the hospital was over $1 million. And that was a lot just from the brain. But I had good insurance, so thank God, because I wouldn't have been able to pay. My parents had to. But that's what my wreckage did. When I went to court, I finally came to the conviction day of the wreck, which I knew I was going to get the most time. And we were just hoping it was county. And like I said, it was county. I got to do house arrest. I had to pay a lot of money. I had to do the class, the 18-month class, through car or something. And then I still have a lot of brain injury. And I had to go to AA the whole time I was on probation. I had to get autographs from the people. And I never knew what AA was. I've seen, like, I heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. I, in fact, saw a couple comedies that showed AA. I don't know what it was. It was a long time ago. So when I went to AA, my first meeting, my mom went with me. My mom went with me for quite a few years. But the first year and a half, two and a half years, I didn't really know I had a problem. I was the 20-year-old that got caught. I didn't know I had a tornado, and that 6 weeks of me getting in all that trouble, going to jail, getting a minor, having a car accident, that was my tornado. Part of it. What happened is I started going to AA, I started getting better, I started going back to college, I started hanging out with friends, I started running into friends, I started hanging out in Hanford, and I started picking back up again. And I didn't pick up on the booze first, I first picked up on the green, which, as you all know, it's marijuana. And, most of y'all know. Maybe not all, but enough. And I did it like 6 times. And mind you, if I were to get popped, I'd go to prison. They said, you get in trouble, you're on formal probation, you're not going to Kings County, you're going to Chowchilla, and you're going to do the time, the 16 months they suggested. And I still picked up. Not only that, but I have metal in my head, and I could have a seizure. One time, that's it. It could kill me. One wrong hit on my head, I'm dead. I've got screws in there. Real screws. And I do. And I've set beepers off at the airport. Let me tell you, they had to frisk me quite a bit. But that's the insanity of my addiction. I talked myself into it, and I didn't see that. But let me tell you where the God shots started coming. When I ended up picking back up after the pot, I stopped and realized I had a pot problem, so I was sharing that. I got a sponsor, Sharon B. Some of you know her. And she's like, okay, you're not an alcoholic. We'll go with that for now. And I started doing some step work, but I never got to step 4. I still just thought I liked pot, and I just can't do it anymore. But I'll be damned if within 6 months I didn't pick back up on the booze. And don't ask me, except all I can say is I have angels, and God probably knows I may not be able to survive prison anymore because I can't fight like I used to. I can't do that. One wrong hit, I'm dead, you know. And I didn't get caught. And I picked up the damn booze again, and before you know it, I was mad at all the AAers because I still had to keep going to those freaking meetings. And I'll be damned if I didn't pick up where I left off and start having blackouts and having regrets and doing things that isn't me and almost getting into fist fights and just living a lie, lying to my family, just breaking my family's heart. And my dad finally told me, he goes, I can't do it. And I said, why? He goes, it'll kill me. I can't do it anymore. First time almost killed me. He goes, I can't do it. He's like, you got to get your shit together. You're out. So I already was ready. I was desperate. And on my own, I was like, I really didn't think I could get sober, but I was still going to those AA meetings. And Sharon didn't throw me away. And she had faith in me, and my family had faith in me, and I basically rode that horse until I could have faith in me. And I did everything Sharon told me to do. And thank God she's a good lady, because I could have been in deep shit. I was vulnerable. I was like, whatever you do, I'll do it. I called 3 women a day, and they were always different from the program. I went to a meeting every day. I haven't drove in years. I wasn't driving then. I haven't drove in over 18 years. I made it to a meeting every day. If I couldn't make it one day, I'd go to 2 the next day. I made a gratitude list every night before I went to bed of 10 good things I was able to do for the day. Not what happened for me, but what that I was able to do. Like take a shower, make my bed, have a roof to wake up under. And I worked my step 4. And I worked my step 5. And before you know it, a year's coming by. And I'm still sober. And I didn't get in trouble with the police. And I didn't go back to jail. And I'm actually feeling like I can really stay sober. Because I really didn't think I could. Not at first. My self-esteem was too low, and I did that to myself. I have depression, too. I'm not manic or bipolar, and I don't down on those who are, because that's not your fault. It's a chemical imbalance. But I do have depression, and I've taken one antidepressant, and whenever I'm not doing drugs or alcohol, it works. Once a day, since I hit puberty, since I was 13 years old. So I've managed to stay sober and work the steps, and I still go to meetings, and I'm happy. And I ended up going back to college. It took me about 8 years to get 2 years because I had a lot of brain injury. But then I went into the bachelor's program and I got it done within 13 months. But my dad got really sick at this time. And I was about 8 years sober when my dad started getting sick, and we were going to the doctor, going to the doctor, going to the doctor, asking what's going on, test for this, test for that. And when something's wrong, they have to go through this whole process of figuring out, marking things off. Okay, that's not it, that's not it, that's not it. By the time we figure out what's going on, it's Christmas of 2007. He's going in for a biopsy. It's going to be a 3-day procedure in Fresno. And it was kind of cool because I was really nervous, and that's my dad, and he's like the first man I ever loved. I come from a good home. My parents and him have been married almost 40 years, and they were my strength, man. They held me up when I just couldn't. And my dad's real thin. He's 6'4", and he gets down to 150. My dad's usually about 210, 220. And we figure out, and the good thing about being at this hospital is I'm not leaving. So I stayed at a hotel with my mom across the street, and it's at UMC, Fresno Community, because they're merged together, where they saved my life. And we're finding out within, my dad ends up being in the hospital for 11 days. We're finding out he has cancer. He has lung cancer. He has a herniated heart. He has an irregular heart. He has an aneurysm in his aorta. He has an aneurysm in his brain. And it's like, where do you go? So it's like you have to handle everything fast, but you're so time stands still. And it was the first time I ever went to a meeting at UMC. And my girlfriend, Cammy, who will always be one of my best friends in my heart, picked me up at the hospital and took me right there. And I remember I felt so at home because I had to hold it together. My mom finally started to crack a little. And she's the toughest woman I know, but her soulmate was sick. And I end up sitting by this big old ex-Hell's Angel. And I felt so at home. I just felt like I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I'm in University Medical Center where they saved my life numerous times. And they're treating my dad. So my family, we're fighters. Not just good old street fighters. We did that back in the day. But I mean, we're fighters. We're not going to throw in the towel. We're going to fight. And I know my dad's going to fight. So we start treating him, and he starts chemo and radiation. And finally, they gave him this pill that helped stimulate his appetite so he could start gaining some weight back because he needed it. And he beats the cancer. And I'm still working a really good program. I'm going to meetings a lot. I'm laying it out there, just telling them what's going on, because I really am trying to hold it together for my family. I feel like it's my turn. And July 14th, I went and stayed the night at my mom and dad's. My dad was coughing again a lot, and he beat the lung cancer, and his lung wasn't collapsed anymore. They were giving him these like calcium deposits once a month because he had a little cancer spot on one of his kidneys. But he was starting to cough again, and we didn't know why. And I went and stayed with my mom, and she got real nervous, and he just went to do another treatment because even though he beat it, he still had to finish a 6-week round. I went home on the 15th, and July 16th came in 2008, and my brother calls me, and he's very serious, and he says, "You gotta, Dad passed out. He's at the hospital." And I go, and he was just so weird, and I go, "What's wrong?" He goes, "Bubba, it's not good." And I was just like, so before I get all upset about that, I got to the hospital. My sister-in-law picked me up. We got there. My dad had an embolism, and it burst. And basically, that means like one of his arteries burst. And when that happened, he dropped. His heart stopped. His breathing stopped. And they brought him back, and they had him on a machine. But he wasn't there anymore. He kept starting to code blue for that next 10 hours. And it was probably the hardest time of my life. Because I want to hold it together. My mom deserves that. I don't want to drink, but don't think I didn't make a scene at the hospital. At one point, I had to get it together because I couldn't get arrested. But my dad, well, I knew I was going to get arrested if I didn't get it together, because I'm very outspoken when it comes to my family and people I love. Like, you can keep getting me down, I'm going to keep getting back up. And my dad, when they brought him back, it's like when you lose that much oxygen and they bring you back, even though I know his spirit is gone, your brain is short-circuiting. So he's on this big old bed, 6'4", and as the breather is breathing, he's going, and one eye's opening. But I knew it wasn't my dad. I was hoping it was my dad. I was just, and his arm kept hitting the banisters because he's big in this bed, and I said something, no one did anything. Finally, I said, and I cussed, and I'm not even going to say it because this is recorded, but I cussed like a sailor. And the next thing you know, a nurse, I think it was actually just a cleanup crew, came and we wrapped towels around it, because it was just hard to watch your father die, even though you're fighting, like, when you're at, it's like, and we had to make a decision, and his blood pressure was going down, and he was dying. And that was probably the hardest thing I've ever went through. After that, I still wanted to stay sober, but I came to a dark place where I didn't want to wake up. And one morning I woke up and I was just really, really down. And I was sober and I was going to meetings twice a day like a newcomer, because that's what you guys taught me. Keep it basics. Get back to the basics. Life is going to keep moving. And when I woke up that morning, sad I woke up, I got scared and I called my counselor and I said, I need to start seeing you again. I'm going to 2 meetings. I said, but I'm in a really dark place and I'm smart enough today and I'm sober enough today to know I need help. And I did counseling for like 4 to 6 months. And through time, I started to get a little better. It's been over 7 years since my dad died. And little miracles were happening. There's a man here tonight named Mr. John. I'll call him John G. Another little Portuguese that knew my father, and I didn't meet him till after my dad died. And another one that worked for my grandfather, which was my dad's, that's in the program. Some of you guys might know him as Frank Valley. Worked for my grandfather, best friends with my uncle. I wouldn't have met him if I wasn't in the program. All these little miracles that have happened, I got because of this program and God. But I've been able to be there for other friends that have lost people that they love. And it's never easy, but it's okay. It's not going to be easy. Life isn't like that. You just can't give up. There's too many tools. And you're here for a reason. I had to look at that. Even when I get depressed, I get angry still. That's my first thing, because I get protective over myself, so it's easier to get angry instead of sad, because I hate getting vulnerable. But I work a program, and I have to. It's my survival. I've been saying this a lot. The older I get, the more willing I have to become. Because that's the way it works. So anyways, I'm really grateful to be here. I will let you know, tomorrow is my birthday. I got sober 11/19/99. And tomorrow's the 19th, and I'll have 16 years. And if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have it. So thank you.